Welcome to the Scuffed Podcast. I'm Adam Bells in Minneapolis. With me is Greg Velasquez in Des Moines. We talk about U.S. men's soccer. We won the game. 1-0 on a 71st-minute winner from Tyler Adams, arriving onto a ball from Anthony Robinson, who was running up the left wing. Fire up your narrative machines, my friends. No, just kidding about the narrative machine. It was a poor performance from the U.S. against a weak Mexico side that rarely looked threatening. But we're going to react to it as best we can. Greg, how are you?
Pels, I'm good. That was actually a great friendly in my eyes. Not at all because the soccer was worthwhile. It very much wasn't.
No.
But because the contrast in certain variables was just so stark.
Contrast in certain variables. You want to expand on that right now or hold off till later?
There were a lot of things that I think fans were not happy about seeing. There were definitely things about the lineup, about the formation, the personnel that I wasn't happy about when it was announced, or at least that I didn't want to see. I even talked about, you know, the Will Trapp stuff, and I didn't mind seeing Will Trapp again because it just means you're going to find out more about Will Trapp in that role, and you're either going to be, your opinion of him is either going to be strengthened or refuted.
Yeah.
So I was excited to at least, I was hoping that it wasn't just going to be a complete slog and we'd actually be able to see some differences play out. And the way the game played out, I think we did see a lot of real key contrasts. And
contrast between players' performances is what you mean?
Player performances, team shapes and systems. And so not all that's super important because, again, this coach isn't exactly sticking around for the long haul. I think it's fans, like, it's still good to see that stuff. It certainly makes things more interesting, I think. So I actually, like, as an experiment, I thought this was actually a pretty interesting game with a lot of cool takeaways.
Okay. Well, let's talk about the lineup and formation real quick. We came out in a 4-1-4-1 with Trapp at the six, as we have been clearly on record saying we didn't want to see. Adams and McKennie were in front of him. We like both those players. Acosta and Weah were on the wings. Weah on the left, Acosta on the right, and Zardes was alone up top. I called it a Trappist Zardesian 4-1-4-1. Also,
it sounds exotic.
Also, Sarakin made three changes at the back. CCV stepped in for Wolfsburg-bound John Brooks at center back. Eric Lehi replaced Anthony Robinson, who had a tough game against Brazil, at left back. And Shaq Moore replaced DeAndre Yedlin at right back. So, first of all, what did you make of the lineup?
So, you know, we talked about the projected lineups coming into this game, into this camp, and like the only things that I absolutely wanted to see were Stefan in the lineup for 180 minutes and Robinson in the lineup for 180 minutes. So I was not thrilled that Robinson was left off. I don't think that his performance against Brazil is any real justification for it. Like, we got to take him off. He got burned by Douglas Costa. Like, he's 21. Lehi, I think, is 30.
Yeah, well, let's just call him about 30.
All right. I don't think that Lehi is the solution long term. He's sort of been a bubble player for the last 6 years and on the wrong side of that bubble for whatever reason for the prior caretakers.
Yep.
Certainly, the goal should be as much information about Robinson as possible, in my mind. So you play him again unless he's literally like mentally breaking. And you get more data on him. And if he continues to just get burned or whatever else, then you need to learn that. So I was disappointed to see Lehi start.
But the sort of time is running out on him. Maybe that's what this like just drove that point home. And so in that way it was useful.
That's exactly right. Yeah. So I think that ended up being a very useful takeaway. Cause I didn't think he was great. And we'll get into that when we start reviewing people. But yeah, so that was the one thing I was really not thrilled to see. Again, I would have much preferred Adams at the six instead of Trapp, but it was another chance to see if, all right, maybe the Brazil game was a one-off and Trapp actually is this rock-solid anchor of a team.
Oh, no, sort no, of, no.
That he's – I feel like he's sort of been that's sort of the narrative that's taking place is Captain Will Trapp and his leadership for this group.
Yeah. Well, before we dive deep into the player performances, should we talk a little bit about what the plan was and how it worked?
Yeah, for sure.
I haven't seen anything Sarakin said from the press conference, the post-game press conference yet, but it's looked to me like he was trying to do pretty much exactly the same thing as against Brazil. I mean, Acosta wasn't burning up the wing and trying to deliver crosses in. He was a little bit more tucked in. And I suppose we were trying to release players from the midfield. We had a lot of them in there into the attack, which is what Sarakin said he wanted to do against Brazil. It didn't work. I mean, whatever we were trying to do, and I have no confidence that that is exactly what we were trying to do. Whatever we were trying to do didn't work at all. The first half hour, I mean, not the first half hour, the first 45 minutes were terrible. We were terrible.
It was a mess.
We could barely even connect a pass.
Yeah, and I feel like everybody suffered as a result. Anytime we passed beyond the back four and Trapp, nobody really knew where the next guy was going to be or where he should be, no. It seemed like. So no one was looking great. It was tough for Zardes. It looked like even like McKenney and Adams wouldn't know if they were supposed to essentially like burst through off the ball and become another forward or like come into the middle and collect and circulate.
Yeah, I was going to say, forget about Zardes. It was almost like Tyler Adams and Weston McKennie were strikers starved for service just inside the center circle, just on our side of the center circle. They couldn't even get the ball. And I don't know what to attribute that to exactly, but
it looked like Weah was sort of on an island out on the left wing. Like he was almost like that asymmetric style where Costa's going to pinch in, but Weah was going to hug wide a little wider. And I didn't think he was having much fun out there.
Did he look really frustrated to you?
Yeah, seriously, he looked like he just hated. I'm going to get into Lehigh a little bit, but it looked like he just hated playing on the same side as Lehigh. I don't know. Tim Weah looked like a guy who was used to playing with much better players.
Yeah, he had a pretty good night too. One more thing before we go into the player performances, just a brief overview of the key moments in the game.
You can almost skip the first half, Bells.
Well, I mean, the one important thing happened in the first half, which was McKenney going down with an injury,
sure,
an apparent injury, and Julian Green coming on. And from what I could tell, maybe correct me if I'm wrong, we switched our formation up at that point or shortly thereafter. This was right before halftime anyway. We Adams dropped into a double pivot. Green came on for McKenney. Adams dropped into a double pivot with Trapp. And then it was basically a 4-2-3-1.
Yeah, so at that point, Weah and Acosta is tightened up underneath the striker, I think, and we're less sort of oriented out wide. Green played as like an attacking mid, which is where he's been playing for his club for all of the season, as far as I can tell. He's been starting as essentially like the 10 in a 4-2-3-1. So I'm sure he's sort of familiar with that role. And it did look like there was a pretty immediate, at least we looked a little bit more coherent almost immediately.
Yeah.
All right, that's the first half. Well, there was also the moment that Will Trapp got, like, put on his ass in the 18.
Diego.
That's just a moment that you're going to want to watch if you haven't seen it yet.
Diego Lainez, who is a very good player, only 18, but been dangerous everywhere he's played in his young life, did make Trapp look very bad, and the internet made it into a meme almost immediately.
Those were about the only two events, real events of the first half. Oh, no, that's not true. We've got to also hit up. I think you need to talk about the fact that Zach Steffen made that save in the first half.
Big save, yeah. Big save on a cross. Was it a set piece or just a play across from open play? Headed firmly on frame. I don't remember by who from Mexico. And Steffen reacted admirably and tipped it over the bar.
So there we go. It turned out it was a very eventful first half. Three events.
Three whole events in the whole half. Okay, second half. the big events in my view were Robinson came on for Lehigh in the 56th minute, and then there was a red card in the 67th minute after Miazga baited Mexico by picking on Lainez, who is, you know, he's only like 4 years younger than Lainez, so they're basically peers age-wise, but,
right.
But he looked like he was his dad, and he made the most of it, making a gesture for you're a short guy and I'm a tall guy.
Which I'm totally on board with, because Lainez was literally like stepping to Miazga as though he was going to like tussle.
Yes.
And yeah. I think once tussling is involved, I think Miazga's within his rights to be like, come on, buddy, we're not going to tussle. Not you and me.
Yeah.
Not at your height.
I think that's totally fair. Yeah. Lainez stepped to him in a way that I think Miazga didn't quite appreciate given the height differential. And that you know, we don't know for sure, but that probably helped contribute to Angel Zaldivar's red card just moments later.
Yeah, put a little extra spice into a tackle on Captain Will, which obviously, regardless of our opinions of his play, no one goes after our captain.
And 4 minutes after that, Tyler Adams scored. And then the rest of the game just sort of petered out. So, should we move?
That was it. That was the game. Those were the events.
That's what happened. Should we move to the player performances and start from the back?
Yeah, same as last time. I think that worked well.
Okay, Zach Steffen, you got your 180 minutes.
Yeah, man, that's what I wanted to see. I think that's what we both wanted to see. We saw it. I don't think he did a single thing wrong in 180 minutes against elite competition in one game and solid competition. Another game. I'm not trying to throw a ton of shade at Mexico, but it was a young team trying to find its way.
Yeah, solid, maybe even a little bit generous.
Yeah,
they were okay.
But he made Steffen made the one good save, and he was sure-handed any other time that he had opportunity to be. So, very much the prohibitive number one at this point for the U.S.
Yep, I agree. He should start all the friendlies for now. Center backs, Matt Miazga and CCV. I think, you know, that whole episode with Lainez was maybe the highlight of the night for the U.S. outside of the goal. And I don't want to put too much in it, but I do appreciate Miazga's mean streak and his nastiness. And he was pretty savvy in that whole episode. You know, the Edson Álvarez came flying up to Diego Lainez's defense and bumped into Miazga real hard with his chest. And Miazga, with a bemused look, just kind of turned immediately to the AR and pointed at Álvarez. I particularly appreciated that
part. Right, because that kind of stuff, again, in CONCACAF, that's going to be important. You can't lose your head and turn it into retaliation stuff. Like, you have to sort of be above it all. You can still participate. You just have to be above it while you do it.
He seemed very much above it, I thought.
Yes. Yes. He looked like it was that was such a millennial like body language thing where he's not puffing. He's just like enjoying how absurd the whole thing is.
Yeah.
As it's happening.
Yeah, maybe Miazga secretly has a blog. and then CCV, I thought looked fine. You know, neither of them was really tested a ton, and I'm not trying to say CCV played a bunch of line breaking passes. He didn't do that, but his distribution was adequate, and I noticed a couple times where he passed it forward.
Yeah, they definitely had less to do in this game. They got to coast a little bit after the Brazil test. One quick note on Miazga, though. Like, I do think it was important that he was playing left center back instead of right center back in this game. That's a little versatility that could be important for us over the long run with the inevitable injury suspensions that we're going to face.
Absolutely. Going through, yeah.
Gold Cup, going through qualifying. So that's good. That's a good little note to take from that as well.
Okay, this is going fast, way faster than last time. Fullbacks. I think we'll have a lot more to say about this.
So I kind of talked about Lehigh already. I didn't want to see him, and I thought he was bad. It's not just that I didn't want to see him because he's 30. Like, that's the reason I didn't really want to see him. But then when we did see him, he looks like a player that's like playing soccer from another era, and not in like a good way. He's just all like tough guy fouls and like no nuance to him. I felt like he was the least composed on the ball. Didn't seem to want to make passes. Like, was just looking for an opportunity to float a ball into space for somebody to chase after. Again, I thought Weah was like visibly frustrated having to play with him.
Do you really think that?
I'm probably projecting there, but I might even put some Weah or Lehigh moments together the way I did for Trapp.
Oh man, you're savage.
Well, it's like, I feel like people are like, Lehigh still might have a role to play, and I guess he might, but it should really be as a like backup depth guy. I just didn't want to, I didn't think there was any reason for him to take minutes from Robinson.
Right.
I was disappointed that when he started, I was disappointed when he came back on in the second half, and I was very relieved when he's replaced by Robinson.
Yeah, he wasn't good. He couldn't connect passes. He had a couple giveaways early that were totally unnecessary, and he had trouble with Lainez, which I think most players would, but yeah, I had trouble with him too. So I guess we agree about Lehigh.
And then so then Robinson comes in, and this is where again I think there's a real takeaway here, and he was just like such a revelation. Whatever his issues were against Brazil, he came on in the 57th minute, and by the 80th, he'd set up Zardes for a chance from 4 yards out. He'd set up Adams' goal from 10 yards out, and he put the ball on Wood's foot at the 6. That's a lot of production in 25 minutes in a game that lacked events otherwise.
Yeah, most of – would you say – maybe it's all of our – real attacking events came from that left side in the second half after Robinson came on. I mean, there were a couple other things here or there, but.
So, yeah. So for me and my biases, that was an excellent contrast of the guy I didn't want to see sort of being ineffective, and the guy I really think should be the answer right now had a stellar performance.
Yeah, the sweet, sweet taste of vindication.
Yeah, he didn't have to wait long, did he?
No. Moore. Shaq Moore. How do you think he looked?
Oh, man. So Moore didn't look much better than Lehigh. He looked different. Moore looks like a modern player. Like, this sounds so terrible for like, Lehigh, but Lehigh looks like old fashioned, and it's not, maybe it's just because our team's so young now, but Moore looks like a modern player. He just looks like he right now, his level isn't there.
Yeah. And we could, you know, we can maybe give him a mulligan on that because, I realize everyone that mulligan is not a soccer term. Because he hasn't actually played any competitive minutes yet for his club, and that's not his fault. That's the fault of the Spanish Federation or his club, because he hasn't been registered. But yeah, he didn't really move the needle. And I was surprised at how much faster the Mexican left back, the 20-year-old Mexican left back, looked than Moore. Gerardo Arteaga. He had no trouble with the pace of Moore or Acosta all night.
Yeah, and I don't know that Moore really had – I don't know if Moore's pace is really – I haven't seen him play that much. Like, is he considered like a speedy outside back?
Yeah, I mean, when I saw him in La Liga, he looked faster than most of his opponents.
All right.
And, you know, he could get into – when he was playing for Levante's first team last fall and early this year, he wasn't always great, but he was always good for a couple overlapping runs and across into the box or two.
All right. But he doesn't seem to be at like Yedlin's level of pace or Robinson's to me. And I noticed that against France too, in his minutes against France. And it definitely seemed that way today. Like he doesn't have anything close to breakaway speed.
Yeah, well, it sure didn't look like it tonight, which surprised me. That's why I mentioned it.
So it was nice when Yedlin came in. I think an underrated part of our qualifying struggles, if we can dip back into the last cycle.
Oh, please.
I haven't turned that page completely. I think we should try to take some lessons from it. I think an underrated part of that was how woeful our fullbacks were in getting into the attack. Again, the focus tends to be on Trinidad, but like there were so many poor performances in qualifying. Mexico at home, at Panama, Costa Rica at home, at Honduras, where we just generated so little. Like it all fell on Pulisic or Dempsey to just pull something out of the hat, because we had just such average attacking fullbacks. And so that's sort of what I see is Lehigh is just another one of those types. And so if Shaq Moore can't be a good attacking fullback, I really think we need to keep digging for a Yedlin replacement. A Yedlin backup, I should say. I'm not trying to replace Yedlin.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good point. I wanted Reggie Cannon to be in this camp. I rate him a little bit more highly than Moore. And now I feel vindicated on that front. I'm not going to feel vindicated on all fronts tonight, if anybody's wondering about that. But this makes me want to see Cannon even more in October if he's available. I forget when MLS playoffs start. MLS playoffs last for 3 or 4 months, so
I thought they took a break for the FIFA window, but maybe they don't, and maybe even if they do, their teams won't be eager to release players.
Well, there's two FIFA windows, though. There's the one in October, and then there's the one in November.
One in November. Okay. Well, I'm also hoping to see Cannon. I think Moore was okay. Like, I don't think he did anything horrible. I kind of expect that he'll be the backup to Yedlin again in November, assuming everyone healthy.
Yeah.
But, yeah, the October camp seems like a good opportunity to get Cannon in, should he be available.
Okay. We should move on to the central midfield, which is the sort of the hot button issue of the day. It was so bad in the first half. And it was, like I said, Trapp at the six, Adams and McKennie ahead of him. We couldn't get anything going. We couldn't connect any passes, like we said at the top. Adams and McKennie just couldn't get on the ball. And then when they did, which was rare, McKennie was a little bit sloppy, maybe a lot of bit sloppy. And Adams wasn't all that great in the first half, I didn't think either. But part of that is they were always getting the ball in a bad situation. Trapp didn't stick out too much to me on the ball with anything negative. I'll await your GIF thread on that. but he got roasted so much as a defender, and his lack of elite athleticism, which I talked about last week, was again on display, and makes me just feel like, hey, let's try somebody else at the six, even if he is a leader of men, you know?
Yes, we definitely, I think, saw like the online pendulum swing hard back at Captain Will after the generally favorable reviews he got versus Brazil. I don't think like I was the first person to say that maybe Trapp wasn't as strong in that spot as the sort of narrative was painting.
You may have been the first person to document it, though.
And I think that's really sort of like an obvious shortcoming. If I'm gonna go off on a little bit of a tangent here, of like professional soccer reporters, like I don't know if it's just sort of easy content, but like everyone will come up with their player grades after games, and it's like just show us, like, better than a player grade would just be to like show us six things that they did. And I know you can find that one if you're digging deep enough, but there's only 11 players playing. Like, we could probably somehow this could probably exist for the majority of the players for every game. I don't know. Maybe I'm asking too much, Bells.
I don't know. I mean, it took you a while to put that together. I bet.
Yeah.
And
I know reporters have families and deadlines. And anyway, that's my tangent, because it does. It just seems like it's so easy to just say, yeah, he had a good game, and then be like, but did he? Like, I just don't feel like he did. So anyway.
Yeah, no, I mean, obviously it's true he didn't have that great of a game. I mean, to take that tangent a little bit further before we get into the midfield more, I was at the press conference on Saturday night or Friday night, and there were almost no questions about Sarakin's tactical plan in the post-game press conference after the loss to Brazil. There was one reporter, Franco Panizza, who did ask about the 4-1-4-1, and then I transcribed that quote and put it on Twitter. But I was really struck by that like nobody really asked Sarakin much about his plan. Now, you could say, well, Bells, you could have done it, and that's true, I could have, but I was just trying to keep my mouth shut and see how things worked. But there was nothing asked, really. And Sarakin, you know, he barely answered the question about the 4-1-4-1, and in the middle of his answer, he said, I don't want to get too technical. And, you know, some of us were thinking, like, please get more technical about it, you know?
Get any technical about it. Like, we'd settle for any technical explanation for it, you know, for good things or bad things, like...
And I think, yeah, exactly. And I think there's, you know, I talked to somebody else who's familiar with this about it, and he also said he's been disappointed by the quality of the questions in the press conferences with the coach. The reason, though, is maybe a little more nuanced than just like, hey, they're stupid, or they're like, these reporters are all stooges of MLS some, you know, stuff like that sort of tinfoil hat stuff. It's more just like, the focus at newspapers for sports writers has been historically more like narrative and player profiles and like the personalities at work and stuff. And that is, you know, that is a lot of what sports journalism is about. The casual fan wants to read those kinds of stories more. But, you know, if you really care about the game action, that's not what you're interested in. Like, that's not personally what I'm interested in. I'm interested in like, what were we trying to do and did it work? And do we have the players who can do it? So I don't know if that's all pointless to everybody, but
I don't think it won't be pointless to anybody listening to this, because I feel like if you're listening to this, you want to hear some of that stuff. And I feel like given the current state of the soccer program, like I feel like we're almost owed some reassurance that that the people at the top sort of know what they're doing. Rather than just being like, hey, trust us, guys, because like that trust was sort of broken a little bit over the last 18 to 24 months.
Yeah, it was. And I think, you know, Franco made the point that he thinks the older coaches assume that the media and the general public aren't really interested in tactical detail. And so it's probably some like combination, like a historic thing where the coaches don't really have to talk about it. The coaches think they don't have to talk about it. And the media, for the reason I described earlier, that's probably not their primary interest, you know?
All right.
Well, interrogating the game plan.
Bells, you learned a little bit about how things go. So next time you can tip the scales a little bit more towards the tactical side, and maybe we get 2 questions per press conference that are tactics related.
Yeah, maybe. I'll try it if I get a press pass for the Gold Cup match up here in Minneapolis, or St. Paul, I should say, St. Paul.
All right, log that one for the summer podcasts.
Okay, tangent over.
All right, back to the midfield.
Back to the midfield. So Trapp really struggled defensively, most famously when he got put on the ground by Diego Lainez down at the touchline, end line.
It happens. Like, it happens. He had cover. Again, what I was kind of interested by, and again, I don't think this is all related to me, but even the responses to the post that I had on Trapp were so, like, extremely negative. And it wasn't intended to be an extremely negative portrayal of Trapp. I was just saying, like, I didn't think he had a good game. I thought, like, only 3 guys had good games against Brazil, and I didn't think Trapp was one of them. So it just surprised me to see everyone sort of just universally being like, yeah, Trapp was good. I think Sarakin even said Trapp had a good game. I was just like, he was pretty bad. It's against Brazil.
Sarakin didn't say that. Sarakin said he was okay. He said okay. He put Trapp, McKennie, and Adams all in the same bucket.
So okay.
They did some good things, but need to improve too.
But that was my whole thing, is that I didn't think it was great. And I don't think that in trap you really have anything that you can say, but he, you can see what he could be capable of. Like, I don't think there's anywhere in that, in those Brazil clips where you say, here's what, yeah, he was kind of average, but here's where he could be.
Yeah.
And with Adams, with McKennie, even with Acosta, like, you see, even if they have a rough outing, you're like, but here's what he could do. Adams even today had a bunch of sort of intercepted passes that shouldn't have been intercepted. But then you see that glimpse of, all right, here's what he could do, though.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So yeah. that's my bit on Trapp. I think he's like a depth guy. I don't think he offers much of a high ceiling for us.
Yeah, maybe use him in a pinch if somebody gets injured or something. Because he's obviously, his mentality is good. He's seems like a good guy, and he's going to work to help the team.
That's a very low bar, but yes, he's a starting player on a good MLS team, a central figure for them. If we don't have the full pool available, or if no one else really asserts themselves for a depth spot in the center midfield, then Trapp can be the guy. It just seems bizarre that everyone's sort of like, I don't know, filling him in as this player to sort of build the 11 around.
Yeah, I think where are you getting that from? Is that mostly the Steve Goff article about how he's like a leader on the team or something?
There's that. The fact that he's worn the armband and seems to just be one of the first names on the team sheet for all of Sarakin's games. And I know Sarakin's not going to be the coach in probably a year from now, maybe
hopefully
a year
Friday.
But like it does, it kind of worries me. It's like, is this like some weird thing that I'm just not? That's why I put those videos together, because I was like, am I just not seeing this right? Like, is he doing some amazing stuff that I just don't see? That's really subtle, and I didn't see that.
So did you see anything different from him tonight, or was it the same?
I thought it was mostly the same, right? Like he got pantsed, but he didn't do anything. I didn't think he was like a defensive liability any more so than he sort of already is, just because of his general, I think he is slow-footed. I think he has a hard time sort of changing the direction of his hips.
Yeah, nobody can disagree.
But no, I didn't think it was anything out of the ordinary for Will Trapp, and I didn't think his passing was anything like eye-opening today. It was sort of still just the standard stuff.
Yeah.
I'll say it was better than Brazil because everyone's was better than Brazil. Like, we just had a lot more room to play. The windows were bigger against this Mexico team than they were against Brazil, which is not a surprise.
Let's talk about Adams and McKennie. You kind of have to break the game into two parts. There's the pre-McKennie exit and the post-McKennie exit.
So all of McKennie happened in the pre-McKennie exit.
Oh yeah, that's right. That's how.
That so goes. I want you to give, because McKennie is yours. He's your discovery. I feel like you were the very first person I heard tell me about him. So I want you to tell me what you thought of McKennie in this game.
I'm still very much in his camp, and I want to see him. Slotted in ahead of Adams at the six, Adams at the six, McKennie at the eight. And by the way, Adams wants to play the six, but yeah, he had a pretty bad game. It makes me sad. He did have a couple nice moments early, which are going to get lost because he was very sloppy. Like, his first touch wasn't on his, he never looked like super threatening with the ball. And, he had a couple passes blocked in kind of weird ways. Got in the way of somebody once. just didn't seem on his game at all. And, I mean, even more, I think that kind of thing will come and go. And I think he'll have more good games like that than bad games like that, where he's just not doing anything good with the ball. But I do worry about his quickness and his recovery speed, which is why I want Adams to slot in behind him so badly.
Yeah, I think that is a pretty good assessment. Like, he was off. He was out of sorts, McKennie. And I'm with you a little bit. I'm actually going to make even more. I've been making excuses for him the whole time, but I don't make any excuses for Trapp for some reason. I thought he was – I still think he's sort of the victim of the formation, I think. at Schalke, like you see all these incredible little like speed of thought and like technical executions that he pulls off under like immense pressure and time restrictions.
Yeah.
And with the U.S., like he's not doing that, and it just seems like I don't think he suddenly becomes a bad player. I don't think he's like a head case, because there just doesn't seem to be anybody who's less of a head case than Weston McKennie. I think either the expectations or his assignments are like unclear, and so he's trying to do things that he wouldn't do naturally. I feel like we just need to get him into a role that's more naturally suited for him, and then I'm expecting him to really sort of take off. And if that doesn't happen and the full-time manager comes in and can't get anything out of him, then that'll be like one of the bigger disappointments of this young team.
Yeah, it'd be a huge disappointment. But, you know, for me personally, I think Adams has outpaced my expectations, and McKennie is underperforming my expectations right now. So it kind of evens out, big picture. But I don't know. What do you think about like a McKennie-Adams double pivot?
I think that is what I desperately want to see. I want to see that I still want to see that like in October if they're both there. I want to see Trapp sort of benched, and I want to see Adams in that spot, and I want to see McKennie in more of Trapp's role. And so I know Adams came from a little bit deeper to score the goal today, and I think people like worry that if he's in the holding role, the designated holding role, like you won't get that from him. But I just don't think that'll be a problem. Like, I don't think this is going to be a knowing when to go and knowing when to stay. Like, I don't think there'll be any confusion for Adams and McKennie there, because when Adams goes, like, he doesn't like creep up the field. Like, if he's going to go, it's like, there goes Adams. Like, he's gone. He's fired out of a cannon upfield.
Yeah, everybody in the stadium knows it.
Yeah, so it's not like suddenly McKennie's going to look around and like they both just drifted forward. It'll be like, okay, Adams just blew past me. Like, I'm just going to rotate back. And it doesn't even necessarily have to be McKennie rotating back, because anybody could play in that third midfield role too. Whether that, like, as long as they have some kind of an attacking pulse, it could be, I know you want to see Delgado there because of the attributes he brings to that duo that he sort of complements. Kellen Acosta could be a name for there. Julian Green did the job pretty well tonight, though I'm not necessarily sold on him still.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'll just say that the reason I wanted Delgado in that trio is if you had Adams as the single pivot and then McKennie and Delgado next to each other. That's like a very specific formation that I want Delgado in, because I think he sort of helps cancel out the frenetic nature of McKennie's game sometimes with his calm and his sort of rhythm building passing and his defensive sort of sense of responsibility. I'm talking about Delgado there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I thought if we're going to have McKennie and somebody up as the eights with Adams behind them, I wanted that to be Delgado for all those reasons. If we've got McKennie and Adams next to each other in a double pivot, that's totally different. And I don't see, I don't see Delgado as necessarily the answer. If we're looking for somebody with an attacking impulse and, you know, some ability to drive the game forward, which you're right. Green looked pretty good in that role. I mean, probably not as good as my Twitter timeline would indicate, but I mean, he's getting a lot of love right now.
Well, I mean, it's easy to make that sort of a leap. Like, we got a lot better when Julian Green went in. So, for me, it's like, so if we looked that good with Trapp, Adams, and Green, I'm like, imagine how good we would look with Adams and two proper footballers.
Right. So you're still down on Green overall.
Yeah, and that's obviously too harsh. But I do think that we will have better options than Green. I still think Green – I honestly think a lot of times Green lacks an idea. Like, he just kind of goes and then, like, never really sees what he's going to do with it. And, like, best case, he draws a foul. I think we're going to – I'm hoping that eventually we have players who have a little bit more vision and are just – who think the game a little bit quicker and sort of
– He doesn't have elite vision. You could see that tonight. It's true. He doesn't really, you know, I guess all we needed tonight was somebody to just pick the ball up and sort of turn forwards to
put Max on their heels, right?
Yeah. And that's what Green did, but he didn't really create anything of any consequence in the attacking half. Am I wrong about that? Was there something?
I don't think so. So Green was going to be a candidate for me to try to put some and again, it's not because I want to hate on him. It's because I literally just want to get those compiled, and I don't think anyone else is going to do it. And I want to be like, did he actually, like, did he do this, or is it just him being in this position that did it? And I want to, like, figure that out, and I don't think we'll see that anywhere else, so maybe.
Well, you know, if you want to stick it to the masses, you should do it with Green. And not Lehigh, because nobody's defending Lehigh right now. I just don't see Green. I know we got one specific Twitter follower, disgruntled USMNT blogger at Great War of 2026, big Green fan, who's going to hate us for this. But I'm just going to agree, and I don't think Green did a lot. I mean, what's the best way to put this? He didn't advance possession in any ways that were deserving of an attaboy, I guess.
That were specific to Green. It's like the baseball stat wins above a replacement. Like, I don't know, our disgruntled fan will immediately contend, but he did replace somebody and we immediately got better. So he's got a case, like, credit to him, because he was sticking up for Green after we kind of didn't sing his praises in the Brazil game. He was standing up for him. Green has a very serviceable performance here, and even that's probably being too harsh. Like, Green was obviously, like, a important part of our play. I would contend that a lot of people could have done the same thing, but we don't know that. So right now, Green gets that benefit of the doubt.
Yeah, I mean, I guess there's a certain he has a certain level of comfort on the ball and, ability to connect passes that was. You know, it's hard to imagine Christian Roldan doing the same thing, you know? Or I think Acosta could have done the same thing, but maybe can't, like, carry the ball the way Green can. I don't know.
Well, we'll see. Maybe I'll put if I can get some decent clips, we'll see.
Well, just give him a rating and call it a day. No, I'm kidding. Adams, should we talk a little bit more about Adams?
I almost feel like we don't have to. I mean, we can, but, like, who doesn't think that Adams has been the best attacking player for the U.S. over this entire camp? Are there people? Like, what other player would you even say? I guess maybe some people would say Green, but I feel like Adams has been the standout non-defensive player of the two games.
Yeah. And he'd be a decent shout for a standout defensive player too, as the
yes,
yeah, he's clearly emerged as the sort of the revelation of the camp. You know, I had a lot of questions about how effective he would be in the middle of the field, and he's answered them all, at least for me.
And I know, like, I don't think that these games necessarily put you in, like, a shop window situation. You combine this with the season he's had with New York, and I feel like that transfer fee when he moves this winter
is going to be low.
It will be on account of the underhandedness of the soccer global market, but it sure seems like he should be inching up towards the $7-8 million range. I mean, I'm completely pulling that number out of nowhere, but based on what the rumors had been previously for guys. Like, the number was already thought to be, I mean, discussed at, like, 3-4 million for Adams, right? And it's like, think of the ceiling on Tyler Adams.
Yeah, it's a very, very, very high ceiling. And I think the thing that's most impressive, yeah, maybe there's no shop window effect, but the fact that he looked so ready for the Brazilian match has got to be pleasing to Ralf Rangnick at RB Leipzig. You know, it's one thing to boss MLS games in New York. It's another thing to, you know, he didn't dominate the game by any stretch. I mean, Brazil was a way better team. But if you could pick one American who looked like he was ready for that game and at that level, it'd be Adams.
Yeah, and you pay big money for that kind of potential. So, yeah, I don't know what the workings are behind the scenes between all the Red Bull clubs, but this seems like the Bundesliga is going to be adding a pretty good prospect.
Yes. Yeah. Should be noted, he didn't. I don't think he looked great in the first 40 minutes either. So, you know, I'm saying McKennie was bad. Adams was not as bad, but Adams wasn't that good in the first 40 minutes either.
Formation's fault.
Yeah. Let's see, the wingers. Tim Weah and Kellen Acosta. Was really glad to see Weah out there. Thought he was bright and put Mexico back on their heels a little bit. Had a pretty nice shot right after Green came on. Went through a defender's legs and was just a little bit too close to the goalkeeper. But it was hit well on frame. He wasn't awesome, but by the standard set by the other USMNT wingers over the two game stretch, he was a god.
It looked like we didn't do enough for him, honestly. I was like, I feel bad that we haven't done enough for him. I think when Lehigh subbed out, he rescinded his one-time switch paperwork. he'd mailed it to FIFA, and then he like intercepted the mail carrier.
Yes.
No, he does. He actually looks like he has a very confident demeanor on the ball. Like, I think it's a lot different than like a Julian Green. Like, Julian Green always looks like he's looking down at the ball and he's able to like hold it for a little bit while looking down on it. But it's like he's always going to sort of lose it. Like, he just always seems to. And Weah just doesn't look like that. Weah just looks like he's like, I have a plan and I'm going to be able to pull it off. And if you stop me from doing what I want to do, it's because you're going to give me something else and I'll find that.
Yeah.
And I don't think he really had many chances to do that. But I am very excited for what Weah can bring.
Wait, you know what I like? What I liked about Weah tonight, a very small thing, but I love his side-footed technique. It's very clean. You know, like one time, you know, when he cuts across on his right foot, his passes just zip across the grass. And there was that one time where he switched fields. Did you see that? Very nicely. So yeah, much more
confident. You send me the timestamp on it and I'll pick it out.
Okay. Yeah, it just looks like a little bit more like a sports car, whereas Weah looks like a sports car and Green looks like a Toyota Corolla.
They both might get you there.
That's right.
Acosta, I would say, isn't really a winger. Like, I hate that he was played out there. I don't even think we should, like, discuss his winger. No, in the 4-2, I think Acosta can play a little bit more advanced up the field, but not in a 4-1-4-1. In the 4-2-3-1, I thought he was all right.
Yeah. I just didn't, yeah. I think you're right. There's just not that much to say about him because he was so out of position.
Yeah, I hope that in the future he's contesting for like a third center midfield spot rather than a winger who's actually a fourth center midfielder.
Yeah. The two guys, we'll just take care of these guys real quick. The two guys who came on for them, I believe, were Delgado and Roldan. And they're not applicable because they didn't play enough to make an impression. The strikers were Jazzy Zardes with the start and Bobby Wood for the last 10 minutes. I'd say Zardes had a couple moments he could be proud of, holding up a bouncing ball and finding a pass, but he's just not good enough for this overall. Maybe that's harsh because he didn't really see much of the ball, but...
Or if he did, like, it wasn't like a well-developed sequence. It was like it just got lumped up to him and he had no help and he was outnumbered and what is anyone expecting to do in that situation?
Yeah, so maybe that's a little harsh, but there were a couple times where he was on the ball in the first half. It was just painful to watch, you know? He's just not going to do anything with it.
Like, you're never confident he's even going to, like, actually make contact with it with his feet. And I just mean, like, that's just the way, like, his body moves over the ball, right? Like, he's going to trip on the ball. You think he's going to trip on it. almost every time he touches it.
That's pretty, yeah. I mean, trip on it. I don't know about if I thought he was going to trip on it every time he touched the ball, but I didn't think he was going to connect a pass. If that sort of.
I when there's a defender around him, like, and he's got to hold a defender off and control the ball. I literally think he's yeah. every time he's going to like stumble on it. And the good thing is, like, he's often he like works his ass off. Like he situations, like, he creates some problems for himself, and then he works really hard to try to solve those problems.
Have we seen enough of him? Do you want to see him called up again?
To be honest, no. I feel like if we're in a position where we've got to call up MLS strikers because the pool's not available, I really think it's probably time that it's out the door.
Yeah.
I guess there could be camps where it's Altidore and Zardes in the same camp, which I'm sure will not melt the internet.
Altidore, Zardes, and Agudelo.
Wood was fine. He didn't have a lot to do, right? He got that ball in from Robinson. Those kind of frustrate me, and I might actually put some clips together because Zardes had one and Wood had one where you're receiving like a cross with your back to the goal. And I just feel like this is that nuance that American players often lack, where like if you can't score it, you're not going to have the time to settle it, take a touch to turn and shoot. Like, you've got three guys on your back desperately trying to stop you from doing that. Like, we don't have guys who just calmly lay that ball off for a guy at the top of the box to step into and finish. Mm-hmm.
I can't remember. Was there somebody available for Wood to lay it off to there?
We'll have to check, but there almost always is. Like, even if the guy doesn't look available, you get with just the way it sets up, you can essentially set it in a spot where he'll get the first crack at it.
Yep.
Anyway, like that's just a running frustration I have with our soccer awareness, and that's tough. Like, I'm not saying that's an easy thing to do, but it's one of those things where I think we still haven't caught up. Like, it's a clear deficiency in our game.
Yeah, good point. I thought Wood did get around Edson Álvarez one time and laid the ball off for Green in the box in a little bit of traffic, and Green kind of wasted the chance, didn't really get his foot to it. But 10 minute cameo, not too much to say. I still like Wood a lot better than Zardes.
I don't think they flipped in the depth chart. I'll say this about Novakovic. I think there are people who are like, well, why don't you just play Novakovic? And I think this is probably telling us a lot about where Novakovic stands. If he can't, he didn't make the bench against Brazil, and he didn't get onto the field today. It could be very like much the case that he's nowhere near like Zardes.
I suppose, yeah. I mean, that's a conclusion that's not gonna please a lot of people, you know, especially since we haven't really gotten to see him get a chance. But you're probably right. At least at minimum, Sarakin believes he's not at Zardes' level.
Yeah, and so it just comes down to whether or not we trust Sarakin enough for everyone to just sort of accept that, or if it's – and we won't need to. The new manager will have the chance to evaluate him. But
funny you should ask that question, whether we trust Sarakin, because I think we should talk about that in our next segment.
All right, let's do it.
We'll be right back.
Cotton fields. Oh, you're so down.
Okay, we're back to talk about what we learned, and I guess I'll start. I'm not sure we learned a lot. We had a really tough time playing through the middle again, especially in the first half. The formation didn't make any sense to me, and the first half was really a disaster. McKennie's injury, hopefully it's not serious, forced Sarakin to sub on an attacking midfielder, and then Adams dropped into a double pivot and things improved. So credit to Dave for the adjustment, but geez Louise, I guess my main thing is let's hire a coach. I saw Taylor Twellman did a rant about it for ESPN too, so you know they're hearing that at Soccer House. We're not the only media they consume in Chicago.
We're high up on their list.
It was a pretty bad performance until that formation change, and then it was only, you know, passable. And I think, you know, the red card makes the 1-0 win not quite as satisfying.
Dave's plan all along was to play a man up.
Yeah, it made it a lot more fun when we were playing a man up.
I think we learned a ton. I think you're not giving. I'm hoping you're not giving like Dave enough credit, and hopefully whoever the next manager is who's watching. I think even they'll have learned something. Stefan Miazga, I think. After this weekend, after this camp, I think Stefan and Miazga have pretty much locked in their number one status. And maybe you thought they already were, but I feel like depth charts are like scientific theories. They're never really proven. They just get strengthened with every single new observation. And these were very good observations for Stefan and Miazga over 180 minutes. Anthony Robinson, I think, had a great camp where he's managed to lose and then regain his starting spot. Probably within like 50 minutes of game time. Do you think anybody at this point thinks Robinson isn't the first choice left back after this game?
Well, yeah, I think he's back. He's back in the driver's seat there for sure.
Cameron Carter-Vickers, I think, is due for more looks. I think he had a solid enough outing where he stays on the Rolodex for the next round of friendlies, or at least the friendlies in November in Europe.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought he had a very, very solid game.
I think learning that Tyler Adams is ready is, I mean, like capital R ready for being like a dominant player on the national team is a big lesson to take from these two games.
Yeah, no doubt. I guess my concern there is I wanted to see if we could figure out a way for Adams and McKennie to both thrive on the field at the same time, and we didn't figure that out. So that seems like a big lost opportunity. I mean, you might argue, you'd probably say, well, we figured out that it didn't work this way, so next time we can try different ways, or, you know, there are a few McKennie haters out there who would say, well, we figured out that McKennie doesn't belong in the starting lineup anymore. So I guess you could argue we figured something out any way you slice it. But what I want to figure out is how to get McKennie and Adams to work on the field together at the same time. And I feel like we didn't get there. We obviously did not.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you there. Adams showed that he could play at a very high level in multiple ways. Like, he looked good even against Brazil. He looked good as the six against Brazil when he moved into that spot. He looked good in the double pivot today against Mexico. He didn't look great in the 4-1-4-1 today against Mexico with really muddled roles. Mm-hmm. So it's almost like Adams can look good, so now we know where we can put Adams, and now let's figure out what we need to do with McKennie to get the most out of him. And I think that has to be one. I mean, I don't think the next manager is going to be like, well, yeah, he can do it for Schalke, but he just can't put it together for us. So in goes Roldan. Like, I think the next manager it'll be a priority to get McKennie into that lineup and figure out how to use him.
Yeah. I hope you're right about that. I'm sure you are.
Fingers crossed. We need a Taylor Twellman rant on it.
Yeah. Twellman's, he's like locked into the high level politics right now. I'm not sure he's
So here's something. We love our tangents here because Stu Holden said something about this during the Brazil game, and then Twellman said it here too. And I know it's the conventional wisdom, but they both said you're going to need the leadership and the experience. You can't just play the new kids. And they're talking about this group. So this the group that would dress for Mexico, it's not all new. I mean, Brooks, Yedlin, Mia, like there's some experience there. What do you think they mean when they say you need to have the experience? Like, what is it? Has anyone expanded on that beyond just saying you have to have experience? Like, what part of Bradley and Altidore going to Costa Rica and losing every game in Costa Rica that we've played is needed for these young kids to be able to go to CONCACAF road games and win?
I don't know. I'm just to play devil's advocate. I guess they would say those aren't the only things Altidore and Bradley have done. You know, they've been to World Cups. They've advanced out of the group stages of World Cups. They've qualified for World Cups. Yada yada yada. You know, they've done a lot of stuff, and that experience is needed. I don't see that as all that compelling. So it sounds like I agree with you. Adams seems like he doesn't need anybody to motivate him or keep him organized. He seems like he's ready to do that. And neither does Miazga, and neither does Brooks. So with that nice little triangle right in the middle of the back, I think that's all the leadership we probably need at the moment.
Yeah, I'm not even ready to dismiss it necessarily. I wish they would like expand on that. Like how specifically does Tyler Adams benefit from having a Jozy Altidore? Like Jozy Altidore gets himself sent off in games like this where Miazga kept his cool.
Yeah,
like,
that is true. Yeah.
Like what does their experience translate to onto the field? And I'm just kind of curious. I wish somebody would kind of elaborate a little bit.
I don't know. Maybe there is something to elaborate on. I was going to bring something up. So do you think Sarakin is to be lauded for the various conclusions that can be drawn from this game? You know, for setting it up in a way that we could see the contrast between the 4-1-4-1 and the 4-2-3-1.
Right. For sending out a complete disaster so that we could learn that, yes, this is a disaster. No, not really. I think a lot of the issues people had, and again, there are a lot of sort of my biases that I'm just allowing to be confirmed here. But the Lehigh business, like, I don't think Sarakin should be lauded for trotting out Lehigh just so we can see that Robinson's better. Like, that should just be a manager being like, yes, Robinson is better and Robinson has more upside, and we going into the cycle, Robinson will be the guy, and Lehigh is faded out of the picture. So I don't think it's like a Jill Ellis situation from the U.S. Women's National Team, where in the World Cup in 2015 she like stumbled into an amazing formation after a number of injuries and suspensions after struggling through three games. Like, I don't really give him credit for making the adjustment when you had no choice but to adjust.
Yeah.
And I mean, I guess I give you some credit for sticking with it when it's obviously more successful. But that's what I feel like we had here. We had obviously more successful situations after we were forced into changes.
You could argue he could have brought in Christian Roldan for McKenney with more of a like-for-like replacement. But he did bring in more attacking player. So,
yeah, that's true. I kind of
tip of the cap from Bells.
Yes, there you go. I got to assume that he basically doesn't think Roldan or Delgado are strong enough players. Like that's a change where you're like, well, Green is clearly the next best player. So if we have to make a change, it's going to be Green coming on rather than a like for like where we drop too far in quality.
That could be, or maybe he was watching the game too.
That's true. That's true.
He saw that we were absolutely atrocious and thought, well, maybe we need to make this a 4-2-3-1. Because A, Will Trapp is getting ruined at every moment. And B, we're not connecting any passes through the midfield anyway. we'll never know. Nobody's going to ask him about it at the press conference.
And yeah, it doesn't matter because we're months away from thanking him for his tenure and wishing him well with the Olympic team.
Yeah. I think that that opening lineup was bad enough for me to begin yearning for a new day, even more than I already was. And, you know, I guess we'll talk about that in short corners a little bit.
Yeah. So what Sarakin has done well is brought in the young kids, and he's done a good job of that. You know, like, we can quibble over the fact that Lehigh starts as a 30-year-old, but overall, the lineup today was young. And that's really what Sarakin's job is. The tactics haven't necessarily been great. I mean, that barely matters. That's more on U.S. soccer getting their man in place so that he can actually implement his own systems.
Yeah. Well, two questions I had that I thought were kind of answered in the game were, you know, will McKinney and Adams give us a real foothold in the match? And the answer is not really when we're in a three-man midfield with Trapp at the six. I mean, I don't pretend to understand everything that was going on there, but that sure didn't work. And then what's the drop-off from Yedlin to Moore? I was really curious about that. And I guess I would say that I wasn't as dire about the drop-off as you apparently are, but there's definitely a drop-off. And, you know, not to mention it's hard to compare when Yedlin was defending Neymar and Moore was defending Roberto Alvarado, who's like a teenager.
Yedlin wants so badly to have had 80 minutes against Mexico.
Oh, yeah, he would have had a little bit more joy, don't you think?
Yes, I think he would have kind of toyed with some people.
Anything else we learned? We can circle back to this next week for next week's episode, and after we let it ruminate a little bit. I don't mean definitely. Like circle back to doing blow by blow game recap, but just, you know, any other big thoughts that occur to us or are told people.
We'll do the player by player recaps via GIFs.
Yeah. We'll really know what Julian Green is made of once he goes under the microscope. I had one more thought about the game, and that is that the stadium was a little over half full. It looked on TV like a largely pro-Mexico crowd. And in the game against Brazil, we didn't even fill half of the stadium in New York. And that was an almost entirely Brazil, pro-Brazil crowd. It was, I would say, 80%. I don't have a prescription for this, but the ticket prices are very high. I think the seats I bought at MetLife Stadium were $95 a piece, and they were not good seats either. And we're not getting a lot of U.S. fans at these games at the same time, so I don't know. These should be a big draw. Brazil and Mexico, we're not getting anywhere there. People can take it whatever direction they like, but
I feel like the only way to go is a bad direction. Again, U.S. soccer at this point hasn't earned a lot of goodwill. So pricing people out of games, I think it's a bad look. Also, sort of having to do with stadium today, sort of the worst performance of the entire cycle or of this entire two-week camp situation. Definitely the whichever fans are still doing the ridiculous chant on goal kicks in Mexico games. Like, how is this still happening? How has it not been addressed by either Mexico's federation or federations hosting them in, like, meaningful ways that actually exact some kind of change?
Yeah, that's not changing.
So if you want to schedule Mexico in U.S. stadium, like, all right, we'll play it in an empty stadium. I don't think we would schedule Mexico at that point, but, like, pick something, because it definitely hasn't diminished from what I can tell. It was like emphatic
broadcast.
Yeah, and it kind of went, as far as I know, it went unremarked upon. And I don't know. I also don't know how you can just not remark on it. I don't know. Maybe they think it's like when people invade the pitch and you just don't show them. But I mean, it is just it's extremely audible over TV, and something needs to be done about that.
Yeah, I was watching the
shake my cane at something.
The Univision broadcast, so I couldn't tell if they remarked upon it or not. But what are you going to say? You know, I mean, it's all been said. I don't know. The it's up to FIFA and the federations, I guess.
And so anyway,
they're great at dealing with problems.
Yeah, so that was sort of the low point of the entire thing. Like, that's lower than any soccer tactical performance or decision. So there's my take on that.
Okay. Anything else on the game?
No, man. It's they're too few and too far between. I don't care what anyone says about meaningless friendlies. Like, give me some data. They're just little pieces of data. I just need more.
Plenty of data. Plenty of data, now that you mention it. Okay, let's just move straight to short corners. James Sands, I want to mention him. He has the 18-year-old holding mid for NYCFC, has 2 MLS starts in the past 10 days. He seems like a very smart player and already serviceable at the professional level. He gets a lot of shouts on social media and from USMNT fans, one of the young guns in MLS, you know, got his debut and then another start, and he's been pretty good. I think that while he is a smart player and obviously serviceable at the pro level, he's not close to sort of working his way into the national team conversation, which of course is what people are thinking about ultimately, because he doesn't win any individual battles. He doesn't beat people, and he doesn't stop people either. And I think that's a little bit the problem with Chris Durkin right now too, the DC United holding mid, exactly the same age as Sands. They played against each other on Saturday in New York, and Durkin's a little smoother, Sands is a little quicker to react defensively, but neither wins individual battles. And of the 3 American holding midfielders on display in that game, I would say Russell Knus was the best. And he's a little bit older American who has had a nice run of form since Wayne Rooney arrived in D.C.
And since he came back from injury, like, important to note too, yeah, he hadn't been playing prior to Rooney's arrival. He'd been out injured.
Yeah, that's true. Didn't mean to obfuscate that fact. he doesn't look like he's fantastic on the ball, but boy, he's everywhere, and he closes things down, and his actions are decisive. And I know there's some shouts for him to be called up in the next camp. Wouldn't hate it, I guess. I'll just say, wouldn't hate it.
All right, in worst case, you save all these guys for January, and we turn January's purpose into a essentially
trial,
like a youth MLS camp where no one over the age of 26 is invited.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that makes me a little bit excited for January camp now, because all those guys are going to have nothing to do. Might as well get them together.
Else, that wasn't binding. Me just saying that right now doesn't mean it's going to happen. You know, we don't have that kind of power, right?
I mean, it kind of makes sense, though, doesn't it?
Yes, right in like 3 years from the World Cup, like 4 years from the World Cup, it really makes quite a bit of sense. But you need some experience, Bells, so those guys know how to handle themselves in a soccer camp. Otherwise, otherwise it would just be chaos. It would
be just drinking all the lemonade, eating all the cookies. All right, next one. Tata Martino, rumored for Argentina, rumored to be the next head coach in Argentina. I saw something on Twitter earlier today. What do you think?
I'm assuming that this is a shrewd move by Martino to leverage his U.S. men's national team negotiations. I think this is a plant.
From your lips to Ernie Stewart's ears. I hope that's the case. That can't be what it is, though, right?
No, I don't. I think that's a long shot.
I mean, why is it a long shot, just for the sake of argument?
Well, sort of same way with prospects. There's 6 coaches rumored, so with all sort of legitimate, I'm just saying 6, there are however many, all with legitimate cases to be made. So at best, Martino's 1 in 6. for the U.S. job. I don't know. There hasn't been anything leaked about him to the U.S., so I feel like the only thing that's come out is that he is not a candidate due to his language, his first language not being English.
Yeah, Ernie Stewart sure put him in his place, didn't he?
You barely speak a second language, Tata.
I mean, I've heard he speaks like actually pretty decent English or serviceable English, but he just doesn't want to do it on TV, which I can understand. I don't want to speak Spanish on my podcast, that's for sure.
I don't know. I mean, who knows? Maybe next coach must be bilingual. Any two languages, it doesn't matter, but you have to be able to speak two.
Would you like him to be the coach? Because I would.
I think you'd be fine. I don't know if I've gone on record here, but I feel like there are probably a half dozen coaches that would be totally fine for the job. I don't think we need to worry too much about finding the exact right one, to be honest. Like, does that sound ridiculous to say?
No, it doesn't sound right. I would like for you to expand on it, though. Why do we not need to find the exact right one?
Well, first off, I think it's like impossible to even pretend like you can find the right one. Like, people spend months making hires for these, for like extremely competitive athletic teams, only to have it completely crater and they fire the guy within a couple of weeks or a couple of games. Like, there is no process that guarantees you to hire the right coach. I think you sort of do your best, but there's always a pool of, I think, several coaches. And
yeah,
you know, like, I mean, Bielsa's flamed out at teams, like, and there's just no surefire hire. So you do your best, and again, I think there are five or six coaches who can do the job capably, and getting the exact right one, even in theory, over like another one would probably have the differences in outcome would be marginal.
Yeah. Okay. So you're okay with like a Berhalter or I can't think of anybody else. It's going to be Berhalter.
Berhalter, Peter Vermees, like Tata Martino. Like, you give them the tools to succeed as long as the Federation's doing that. I literally would trust any of those guys to sort of start building the program.
Yeah. Okay.
Oh, compared to any of the other guys available.
Wait, what? Those three guys over?
compared to anyone else. Like, I trust Berhalter as much as I trust Bielsa.
Okay. Okay. All right. Well, I guess we shouldn't spend too much time on Martino, because like the likelihood that he's even in the mix seems pretty low, given that he has never spent more than 2 years at a place, and you'd think that they would want him to sign up for four.
Yeah.
Last thing, U19s. The U19s won the U20 Invitational, which is weird. They beat the U20s on Sunday.
And then they also beat Jamaica and...
and Venezuela. Wait, no, they drew Venezuela.
Okay. But those were their other two opponents.
Right.
Okay. All right, little round robin.
Yeah, and... I found out earlier today that the U20s, when they lost to the U19s, they didn't have Sebastian Soto or Alex Mendez, who were both out with a knock from the U20s win over Jamaica 2 days earlier. And they also didn't have, as we know, didn't have Richie Ledesma, who's out with an injury. They didn't have Uli Yanez, because Yanez was playing with the U19s and scored the game-winning goal. And they didn't have Andrew Carlton, who was in Pennsylvania on a little break from the U20 camp to play with the Atlanta United 2 USL side. So they didn't have their five best attacking players, essentially.
Isn't Tyler Adams a U20?
Well, he is, yeah. Well,
all right. So they were missing Adams.
Right, but I'm talking about people who are like actually in the pool, because Adams is not going to be playing with the U20s.
Isn't Jonathan Amon a U20?
Yes. He wasn't. Man. He wasn't there either.
No, I feel like that should be, the trend should be that whatever our U20 team is in a camp is actually like our U20B team, because all the best U20s are out playing professional first team soccer.
Yeah, this would be more like a C team.
There you go. Say. That's almost even better. Like, that's what I feel like, that's the way I want the U20 team to be moving.
Yeah. No, I generally speaking, I agree. I just think this was a this raised some eyebrows because the U19s beat the U20s. The U19s are supposed to be the, if the U20s were the C team, which is an exaggeration, they were not the C team. They're more like the B team at this point. Then the U19s would be the C team, and they beat. It's like, you know, it's like the JV beating the varsity.
Sure.
It's not supposed to happen. Anyway, it'll be interesting to see how that whole roster shakes out in the next month and a half before the U20 World Cup qualifying tournament in Florida.
That's in October, right?
It's November 1st is when it starts.
Okay, November 1. All right, so this is coming up fast.
It is indeed. It is indeed. We'll have an episode about it, and we'll try to cover the games as much as we can. Anything else, Greg?
No, man. That's it for this camp.
Yeah, we'll circle back and revisit it in our next week's episode. Until then, thanks for listening, and we'll see ya.